All right, Elizabeth Strong.
Yes.
Welcome to V the People.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here with you.
I'm excited that you're here. I have tons of questions because I actually did some research on you.
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, I'm excited to see what you found.
But
I also,
the reason I think I found you, which sounds so weird, but like I was looking on all kinds of Instagrams and trying to find people that I thought would make great guests. And we'll get into it later, but I want to give a little sneak peek that you actually got to introduce Vice President Kamala Harris.
I did. Yes. One of the greatest honors of my lifetime. Yes.
You got to meet her. I'm going to have you tell the story. Okay. If you're allowed, but yes, we'll get
about
there.
That. Yep.
So I'd found you, but in my research I saw, and I thought this was a great way to sort of kick it off. You quoted one time that you say a fantastic life happens on purpose.
Yes.
So when did you start to feel that way?
Oh, my gosh. Maybe the past 10 years or so. I think that I kind of measure a lot of things by my son's age and what my son's doing. He's currently in college. But when he was in high school, I kind of started to have this feeling like, oh my gosh, like I raised this little boy. So I'm a mom of one. So I have one son who is grown now. I won't tell you his age because then you'll try to calculate mine. But I have one grown son. And when he was in high school, I started to kind of get like worried about like what I would do after he finished high school. So I was like, oh, I knew he was going to go to college and I knew he was going to be great. And of course, as moms, we always want our kids to be better than we are. So I just knew he was going to be great. But I was like, oh my gosh, like my whole life really kind of does revolve around him. Mm. So I started thinking about my life, like going forward, like what my life is going to look like, you know, without, you know, I'm his mom every single day, but without having to be like on top of him every single day, you know, like he's growing up, he's becoming a man, he's becoming, you know, independent. So I really started to think about life and what that looks like, you know, going forward and what I wanted to do and how I wanted to live and, you know, how I wanted to be in the community. So I feel like it started there.
Okay. Yeah. I love that. And you've been a salon owner for 17 years.
I have been a salon owner for, wait, it's more.
It's longer.
Yes. This month. So this is the beginning of March. I'm so excited. This is my favorite month of the whole year. This is the month of my birthday. It is also the month of International Women's Day. And it is Women's History Month.
Yes.
And it is also the anniversary of my business. My business will turn 23 years old this month.
Oh my God, the internet is wrong.
23 years old. I know. I was like, wait, I have to do a little Google update.
You got
to
get on Wikipedia.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
All of the above.
Such an honor, such an incredible honor.
So, what has that legacy meant to you as a business owner?
Well, again, in my little kind of what is my life purpose? And, you know, I know my passion in life is to make people, especially women, feel beautiful on the inside and out. Mm-hmm. That is just my passion. And I feel like with my career in hairstyling, cosmetology, I have made people feel beautiful on the outside for so many years that the past, like, 10 years, I've had this incredible opportunity of making people feel incredible on the inside as well. So I love the way that, you know, my Instagram handle is still eStrong Beauty, but if you go on my page, you know, it might take you a little while to find beauty because there's so many other things. Mm-hmm. But I never want to forget that beauty is what started this all.
Yeah.
That cosmetology is just kind of what started this whole thing. And it's just been just an incredible journey to see how my salon life has kind of grown. And I do like a lot of community outreach and, you know, work with the community now. So I think I get to live and leave and this incredible legacy of making people feel beautiful all over the Lehigh Valley. You know, I've done New York Fashion Week too. So in New York City, making people feel beautiful.
Yep.
I've actually done Punta Cana Fashion Week in the Dominican Republic. So I've got to make people feel beautiful all over the world. And now I get to make them feel beautiful on the inside too. So
hell yeah.
Yeah. Right. So
is that what you think originally like was calling to you as far as wanting to get into owning a salon? And was it that kind of...
I'm so glad you asked that question.
Okay.
So this is a really neat question. That's part of my story is when I was in high school, I always felt like I wanted to own something. So I've had an entrepreneurial spirit my whole life long. Even my family, when I was little, they said I always was making businesses. Like, you know, I was a waitress for the family and then, you know, everyone had to pay us and tip us. I was trying to sell things. So I had this entrepreneurial spirit my whole life long. So when I was in high school, after high school, I knew I either wanted to own a daycare or own a beauty salon.
Oh, interesting.
I know, because I really love kids, so I love children. So then I went to beauty school and got pregnant. Now, that is not how I thought that was going to go down. Yes. So true story, that was a little surprise.
You got to do both, really.
I got to do both. Who knew that I have a damn daycare in my house, you know, all of a sudden. So, yeah. So, interesting part of my story. So, I got pregnant in beauty school. That was not the plan. So, that was a little surprise. It was a little happy little pivot. You know, looking back now, I'm like, oh, my gosh. I just, the way that God has, like, a whole plan for your life, because I just love my story, and I love that my son and I are kind of close in age.
Yeah.
So I ended up being a young single mom for a very long time, which is a really big part of my story. So like I said, my son and I have just one son, and we are very, very, very close. But I think that's just a neat part of it. So I went to beauty school, got pregnant, and then just really felt like this was my dream to open my own salon. So of course it was difficult because I had a little baby.
Yeah.
And I was a young, struggling single mom. But now that really plays a part of my story.
Yeah.
You know, that I ended up having, you know, I would never want to encourage anyone to, you know, to start too soon.
Right.
To start too soon if they're not ready.
Right.
But in my case, it ended up being a success story.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you go right from finishing school to starting your own business? Or was there any in between?
There was an in between. So I went to high school, then beauty school, and then there was about 3 years in between.
You were working for other people?
I was working for other people.
Okay.
Yes. Yep. I was working for other people. And like I said, I always knew I wanted to open my own salon. And that's also a crazy story. It's kind of a long story. But the short story is I was working doing hair one day for a local business. They're not in business anymore. But I clocked in about noon. I did one client, and I went to the parking lot to go to my car to get something, and I fell and broke my foot.
Oh God.
I know. So I fell and broke my foot, and it was awful. It was terrible. So now I've got a little boy, and you know, now I have a broken foot. So of course, imagine being a hairdresser with a broken foot.
Right.
So we have stools now, but we did not have stools back in the day. Okay. Yeah. So it was like, you have to struggle. So I had to have some time off, which was very, very difficult. And I went back with the boot on my foot, and they fired me.
Oh shit.
It was the only job of my entire life long I've ever been fired from.
And so, what was the reason?
So there was a whole lot of shadiness behind the scenes.
Let
me just tell you, that salon didn't last long after me. So as soon as they fired me, they ended up closing several weeks later.
Karma.
But yeah, I know. Like, so I don't want to ever wish bad on anybody, but
right.
You got to be careful how you treat people.
Yeah.
Your whole life long, you got to be careful how you treat people.
Yeah.
So I was like, now's the time. So me with my boot and my crutches, did everything I could. Yes. And then it becomes difficult because now you can't get a business loan because you have no job.
Right.
So I studied and learned. I went to Lehigh University Small Business Development Center.
Oh, cool.
And I got an advisor, and I did everything in my power. So I had to take two smaller personal loans, one with the help of my mother. God rest her soul. So I would not have my salon without her.
Aww.
And I had to get smaller personal loans because I couldn't get a business loan because I was on unemployment. And that's how it started.
Damn.
So I knew I wanted it to happen, but I didn't think it was going to quite start like that. And I said, let's do it. So I did most of that with a broken foot, healing a broken foot, trying to do hair, trying to do clients, trying to take clients on the side while I was trying to get the business open.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was that the hardest season, you think?
I think that it ended up being some hard, that was definitely a hard pivotal season. And of course, you know, I opened my salon. I was pretty young, you know, so doing all this at that young age, I look back now and I'm like, oh my gosh, how did I do that?
Yeah.
I'm like, how the heck did I do that? So that was definitely a hard season. But I'm so, so glad I made it through. And like I said, it ended up being successful, but it was a little difficult.
23
you know?
Years later.
Yes.
Is it the same building that you first started in?
No, I'm in my third.
Okay.
Yep. So the first building where I started, I was only there about a year. It was a very old building, so it didn't last too long. And then I was actually in the area of 12th and Tillman.
Okay.
For 10, 11 years there. It's a barbershop now, so it was a great spot for me. I did great there. Amazing. A lot of amazing clients came from that location.
Yeah.
And then the area that I'm at now, which is 1727 Liberty Street. So I'm there 11, 12 years there.
Wow.
Yes. Yep. So we moved there because we needed, we were really growing, and I needed a parking lot. So
right,
yes, I need a parking lot. So we love our little location, which is close to where we are now. We're in the West End. I love being in the city. I love, we've got great windows. We've got a great view across the street from the fairgrounds. So, yes.
And you're right up the street from that amazing coffee place.
Yes.
Barista.
Yes. Yes. I'm right. You know, I love to support local. Love to support local. Love to support our local businesses. So,
yeah.
It keeps me right in town where I like to be.
What do you think is the biggest misconception about the beauty industry?
I think probably, I think I'm going to give you two. I think one is, I think there sometimes is a little bit of a stereotype, a little bit of a stigma that hairdressers maybe are, let's say, like maybe like not the most educated.
Okay.
So I think there's that little stigma like, oh, you know, hairdressers, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And I think we are filled, this industry is filled with the most incredible, amazing, intelligent, trailblazers that I've ever seen.
Yep.
And I think the other one is our competitiveness and our jealousy that sometimes happens in within the industry.
Right.
So I think that's a little, that's probably not so much for the public, but more for hairstylists, that there's this, you know, the spirit of competitiveness, obviously, because whoever comes to you, that's where the money's at, you know?
Right.
But I've been really loving this spirit of collaboration.
Yeah.
That's been going on for the last couple years, where I think people realize that there is enough hair and yeah. people to go around. There's enough. Yeah, we could all win. So, which, you know, I like to promote that concept all the time, that we can all win. So there's enough success for everybody. Success doesn't run out. You don't just wake up today and be like, oh, success ran out today.
Right.
You know, like there is enough for all of us to win. So those are my two little. Yep. I think hairdressers and cosmetologists are just the bomb. They are incredible. They change lives. They are essential. They are trendsetters. They're everything to me. So
I love that. Yeah. I can see how someone coming into your salon would just leave feeling like $1 million.
I hope so. That's my goal.
Like just change their entire outlook in one day.
We had actually an incredible, it's Sunday today and I'm coming off of an incredible salon Saturday yesterday. As you know, our weather's changing a little bit. It's spring. Well, it's not spring yet, but soon.
It feels that
it
way.
It felt like spring, and we had just such a great salon day, and we had some really great moments yesterday of women feeling amazing. We had a new client yesterday and she went to several salons. She's got real curly textured hair, and she had a hard time trying to find a salon that could do curly textured hair.
Yeah.
And we have a really diverse salon, which was always a dream of mine. I wanted a multicultural, diverse salon. We are multilingual, so I never wanted to ever have to turn anybody away. I want everybody to be able to get serviced and feel loved at my salon. And we had a moment of that yesterday, and just like clients were hugging other clients. Aww. And I was like secretly filming people behind their backs. And it was just, I was like, oh, this is it. This warms my heart. This is everything. This is what I always wanted it to be. So
yes, I love that. Yes. How do you think, because I'm sure you meet so many different women, how do you think women can stop putting themselves last?
I think that's one of our toughest struggles. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's probably just within us that we're like these natural caretakers, where we want to make sure everybody else is okay. You know, our sisters, our besties, our spouses, our kids, like we want to make sure like everybody else is okay, that we sometimes make ourselves come last. And I like to be a proponent for that, for not coming last.
Yeah.
For making sure that we're taking care of our own selves too.
Yeah.
You know, for putting ourselves first, if we can't do it all the time, at least some of the time, you know, making sure we're just carving out some time in our schedule, some self-care time, some just, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup. Mm-hmm. So you have to make sure that you're filled too. And doing that looks different for everybody. So some people, I like a vacation, you know, some people like a vacation. Some people like to, you know, they want to read, they want to sit in the park. Some people want to binge watch Netflix. I just finished binge watching Bridgerton. And so like a little self-care time looks different for everybody, but I encourage it. I like to help women achieve it, you know, making sure that they're taking time for themselves too. And just, you know, letting them know that self-care is not selfish.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing we have to put in our mind, our little mindset, that self-care is not selfish.
Yes, 100%. I actually was going to ask, how do you think, because I know you speak very passionately about the Dominican culture and the Dominican community. So how do you think culture and confidence intersect for women?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I think is so beautiful is I started traveling there like 15 years ago, and I just like fell in love with the Dominican Republic, with the culture, the music, the people. The Dominican people are the most hospitable people I've ever met in my life. Now, I've traveled to, I think, 18 or 19 countries, and there's some definite close seconds and thirds.
Yeah.
But the Dominican people are just the most hospitable people I have ever met in my life. And one of the things that is so neat is to see the difference in the culture there. And right along with what we're talking about, one of the things I think that they do so well is they live life and they enjoy life. And one of our big differences, I think, is, which I might mess up the phrase, but like we like live to work and they work to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes we are, and I'm guilty of that my own self because I'm a little bit of a workaholic. So, and I really like my job. So I will think nothing of working a 10, 11 or a 12 hour day and then being like, oh, my feet, you know, like, right. I just like what I do, but making sure you keep that balance. And they really have a culture in the Dominican Republic. It's the only other country I know as well that I could compare to that where they enjoy life. Mm. So, you know, I just came back and of course they have the advantage of having perpetual summer. So of course they have great weather all year long. But one of the things they think they do so well is they enjoy every night. So we just came back and I was over there and I couldn't believe like it was on and popping on a Tuesday night.
Yeah.
It was like Tuesday. I was out to eat Wednesday night and sitting outside and it was like a debate for my eardrums. Like over here was merengue, back here was salsa, over there was bachata. Like every place had like some kind of like live music going on. And I was like, oh my gosh. I said, you know, my friends over there said to me, do you not have this at home? I said, well, for one, it's freezing right now. Okay, it's freezing. So we can't do this, you know? But I said, when we do, like our going out nights are like Friday and Saturday, maybe like a little Sunday. And then, you know, we have Music Fest. We've got a week of celebration there. And then we have Allentown Fair. We've got a week of celebration there. But other than that, like, we have like two going out nights and like that needs to change.
I feel like I need to go to the Dominican Republic.
Yeah. Like why? And you know, you don't have to be out drinking every night. Like they could be just out having lemonade.
Yeah.
They love a limonada. They're just sitting. Yeah. Like they're also having a good time. Like why are we not enjoying every night? Like why are we not clocking out? Like, okay, now we got to relax.
Yep.
Now we got to have dinner. Now we got to have a conversation like this.
Yep.
Now we got to. So that's like my goal. I love that they live like that. They live a little bit more relaxed.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I love that. And it definitely, I could see how it could make you less anxious and then just naturally make you feel like a happier, more confident kind of go-lucky person.
And I think the European lifestyle is like that too. So when I was to Paris a little bit too, kind of getting used to like a little bit more of a laid back kind of living, you know, here on the East Coast, you know, we're on the East Coast here. So we live very structured. We like everything very now. We don't like to wait. We're very move, move, move.
Yep.
So sometimes even when I travel, I do have to check my own self because I know that it's a little bit of an East Coast thing.
Yeah.
That we're like, you know what I mean? Hold
for
on. We're not.
Sure.
Yeah. We're not waiting around. What time is it? You know, we're pretty prompt over here.
Yes.
Yeah. Even, you know, at the airports, we don't wait. We don't, you know, if you got to check your luggage, move aside.
You better be walking fast.
Yes. You better be walking fast or move aside.
Yeah. Move aside.
Yes.
So obviously I know that culture and community have just played such a big part in your salon and your job and your life. How did it come to be that you now serve as the commissioner for Latino Affairs, correct?
Yes.
The Commonwealth?
Yes, for the Commonwealth. So I am a commissioner on the Governor's Advisory Commission on Latino Affairs, representing my county, Lehigh County, and the city of Allentown. Add that to the list of incredible honors of my life. Like I told you, I started to get more involved in the community, and I had the opportunity to meet the governor before he was the governor. Mm-hmm. He is incredible. Mm-hmm. So he's one of my favorite people. So he's a phenomenal human being. He's a phenomenal leader. He is what true leadership looks like. So we met before he was the governor, while he was campaigning at an event here in Allentown. And
I just happened to be there.
I got an invitation and I did find out several years later who recommended me for this, round table. So there was a round table discussion. And I have to tell you, because of my little humble beginnings, I still often have imposter syndrome.
Yes.
Where I feel like, are you sure? Again, I do not have a college degree. I went to trade school. Mm-hmm. So I have a cosmetology license that I am very, very proud of. But so sometimes I feel like, oh my gosh, like, are you sure you want me? You know, like, I don't have a bachelor's, you know, I probably do have a master's and a PhD in people, because I've been working with people for years. Yeah. I'm great with people.
100%.
But I still have this, you know, this imposter syndrome. So I got an invitation to a roundtable discussion that the governor, he wasn't the governor, but campaigning, he was going to be at. So it was 25 business leaders in the city of Allentown. I believe it was Latino business leaders. And I got this invitation. And oh my gosh, when I tell you, I felt like actually standing up and leaving through how I'm like, wait, they must have got the wrong person, because these, when I tell you, this was the best of the best in this city. I was at a table with, you know, a lot of whom I call friends, and they're just incredible people. They run businesses, they make moves, they're politicians, they're doing, you know, they're running nonprofits, they're phenomenal. And I was like, I'm not even at this level.
It sounds like you're describing yourself. Oh, so 100% you were at the right table. They were lucky to be there with you.
Oh, thank you. And you know, I'll never forget, we were seated like how kind of like you and I are right now, where the governor and I were face to face. So of all the positions, him and I were face to face. And I'll never forget, he made sure every single person was seen and heard. He looked every person in their eye, and talked to every person. There was some kind of very important, all the questions were important, but there was some very important question. And he looked me straight in my eye and he said, Elizabeth, what do you think about that?
Oh.
And I was like, well, let me look and see which other Elizabeth he's talking to. And it was in fact me. It was me. So I was like, oh my gosh. So I answered the question. And I just remember that feeling that he gave. I'm like, oh my gosh. Just like,
right.
You know, this guy's different.
It,
you know,
felt genuine and not.
It did. It felt genuine. Yeah, it felt genuine. So after that roundtable, he made sure that all of his staff connected to everybody there. And soon after, so the governor took, of course, he won. Of course he did. So the governor won. And he took office then that January. And okay. 2 weeks after he took office, one of the first things he did was sign an executive order updating state licensing procedures and expediting wait times for people who held state licenses, including cosmetology licenses.
Oh my gosh.
So little me with my only degree that I have, my cosmetology degree. And then his staff called me and they said, we'd like to know, you know, how comfortable you feel talking about your state license. And I said, well, I've held one for 20 years. You know, I said, they said, you'll do.
Yeah. So what did he change with the process? Explain what you mean.
So he, one of the things he did was he expedited wait times. So
to get the license?
To get licensing.
Okay.
So, which is very important. And in fact, I had an issue with that one time myself. There's been a little, for a long time, there was like, okay, if you're dealing with the State Board of Cosmetology, I don't know about any other state boards or any other licensing as far as doctors or teachers or real estate, but I know about cosmetology. We had long wait times.
In Pennsylvania?
Yes, we had long wait times.
What do you mean? Like how long?
I don't remember correctly, exactly, you know, wait times, but, and the other part was there always was this little thing like, and you couldn't get through to the State Board of Cosmetology. You couldn't get anyone on the phone. There was always a little...
So you couldn't work without your license?
Yes, you can't work without your license. So
even if you finish school?
I think they'll let you work on like a temporary, like I said, it's been kind of a little while, so okay. I don't all the way remember, but I think you could work on your temporary right away. But there was just always like, okay, there's, you know, even when I relocated here, I'm going to give you a prime example. When I relocated the salon to the 17th Street location, okay, here's my example. I was able to just move because I was in good standing for so many years. My license was good. I was able to just move and just open, and someone would come and inspect me and give me an official stamp of approval within 90 days. And I moved, and I was halfway through the 90 days and I heard nothing.
Zip.
Nothing. So and then I got closer and closer to the 90 days and I was like, if no one comes here soon, like I can't open the next day.
Right.
This is a girl who I've been working since I'm 14. You know what I mean? Not doing hair since 14, but working. Yep. So I never not work, you know? So I was like, oh, like, where are they? Oh my gosh. But then you can't find anyone. You email and you can't get a response. You call and no one answers the phone. And I began to call and it didn't go well. It didn't go well. And this was probably the first time I had to learn how government works, because I had to figure out like what to do. Mm-hmm. So I remember that I had a ribbon cutting. The ribbon cutting went well, and there were a couple political officials there. And I called one of them. Shout out to my state rep, Mike Schlossberg, because he is the man. He was the man. He continues to be the man. Yes. If I ever tell you the first time I ever had to reach out to state government, and it worked.
And
I called
you.
Him. I had two not great phone calls with the State Board of Cosmetology, where I was crying, and they couldn't give me a date, didn't know when, weren't extra warm and fuzzy, and they said, well, you know, hey, we'll get back to you. And I was like, if you don't come on this date, like I can't do hair the next day.
Right.
You know? So I said, what? Like, I can't do hair, you know? So I called my state rep and he said, let me get to the bottom of things. Let me investigate. And within that phone call to my state rep, I think the inspector came, I think maybe 48 hours later.
Wow.
And yep. And came and approved that 17th Street location. Yes. So that was an incident I had several years ago. Well, at that point, maybe 10 years ago. But that was the first time I've ever had to use the, you know, what should I do? Can I contact a legislator? And it worked for me.
Right.
So my legislator was there for me, helped me out. I got that inspection. Everything was great.
Nice.
But that was something that stuck out in my head. I retold that story to the governor. And I have to tell you, since the governor took office, I have now helped several girls locally with licensing, calling them, helping them, telling them what to do. And, you know, I really feel like we have a trickle effect from the top down, mm-hmm. because I have never experienced that level of wait, delay, or not great customer service ever again. In fact, the last couple times I've called the State Board of Cosmetology, shout out to the State Board of Cosmetology, because they have been the nicest I have ever experienced in all of my years. It's been an incredible experience. Like I said, I think it comes from the top down.
Yeah.
So I've had great experiences. Emails get returned. People are getting help. Licenses are coming. Inspections are coming. So
nice.
That's just a little right. clip of how I think that helped.
Well, and it's also such a detail that helps the economy.
It does. We're
I mean,
the small businesses are running the show around here. We're the backbones of our communities.
Why would it not be a priority?
Yes. So I don't know what things of before, but I know since the governor took office, there has been some significant changes and updates, and even just all around people, a better experience. You know, like people have been great on the phone.
Yeah.
Helpful. And just even on the computer. Okay, scroll down. I helped someone who had a little bit of a language barrier. So I said, put me on speakerphone. I said, you know, I said, I'm here, I'm helping. I want to make sure there's nothing lost in translation. And we're trying to navigate this site. They helped me with that too.
I love
scroll
that.
Down, look at the box. You see the little box, look left, put the arrow here. Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yep. And that's my State Board of Cosmetology, our Pennsylvania State Board of Cosmetology. Yes.
Let's go, State Board.
Yes. Yep.
So what, after that roundtable is what led to becoming a commissioner.
Oh my gosh, all that to come around to that.
No, it's
so,
okay.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
I love
all that
it.
To come back around to that. So several months later, I did kind of start to hear through the grapevine that the governor was updating these commissions. And I started to kind of research what they were, because I thought, how incredible is that, you know? And I know you and I have very similar political views, but not to go too deep, I feel like we all know that traditionally, politics has typically been the older Caucasian man's club.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it is such an incredible idea to have these commissions. So the governor has six of them. So there are six commissions making sure there is a seat at the table for everyone.
Representation.
So there is representation for everyone.
And I know you are the commissioner for Latino Affairs.
Yes, I serve on the Latinos. Let me see if I can give you all six. Okay. So, and I believe there are several other states that have these as well. If they don't, I don't know why they don't. This is just making sure there is a bridge between what is going on in communities. We're like the eyes and the ears of the governor, and everyone's covered. So we've got the Next Gen, which is the youth. So the youth has their own commission. So the Next Gen, the Latino Affairs, the African American Affairs, the Women's Affairs Commission, the LGBTQ, and the Asian American Island Pacificer,
yes.
or Pacific Islander. I'm so sorry, Pacific Islander Commission. So,
that's so
yes,
cool.
So everyone has a seat at the table at this government. And I got a phone call from someone and said, you know, they're, you know, kind of, you know, updating these commissions and putting people in, you know, new commissioners in positions. And is this something you'd be interested in applying for? I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, when they were like, we need you to email your resume now. Actually, when I got this phone call, I was in the Dominican Republic. Of course I was. So they said, we need you to email your resume now. Like the time limit is cutting off soon. And let me tell you, ladies, you need to stay ready so you don't have to get ready. When I tell you that email was ready and updated,
yes.
that resume was done and updated. I sent it in an instant. Bam, updated.
That's such good advice.
Stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
Yes.
I sent that thing before the phone call was done.
Nice.
So, and then I found out probably a month later that I got a phone call. And at that point, it's been a month later. As you know, I did not have a lot of political experience. I have experience in community and people.
That's and, politics.
Which evidently it means a lot, you know,
yeah.
which means a lot. So after about a month when I didn't hear anything, I was like, oh, they didn't pick me. Oh, it's okay. I understand. There's probably more qualified people. You know, I don't have a political background. I don't have a master's degree. So I'm sure there's way more qualified people. And I got a phone call a month later that did bring me to tears. And they said, we just want to tell you, congratulations. The governor has approved your appointment. You've been appointed to the governor's advisory commission. Congratulations. I cried real tears.
Yeah, of course.
I cried real tears. Yes.
It's such an honor. And also, like, just speaking on behalf of someone who lives in the state of Pennsylvania, that makes me so happy to know that that program exists and that he's listening to people who are in the community, who are so intertwined with the people.
I think so too.
That make the community what it is. Yeah. Like, knowing that you're going to sit at a table with him and tell him what's going on, that gives me such comfort.
Thank you. I love to
hear that. So what are you responsible for doing?
So like I said, we're kind of like the eyes and the ears of the governor. So this has been, I've been reappointed now. So I'm on my second term.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, I got one term. Now I got two. So that's just really an incredible honor. And this has been such an incredible feeling and a way to give back. The way that people come to me with concerns, with issues, and I'm able to help them, point them in the right direction, take information, concerns back to the government. Like I said, we're almost like a bridge. Mm-hmm. So when people come to me, it's like I said, it's been beautiful to be able to feel like I'm helping people when they come to me with things, to be able to take back issues and concerns and take them right back to the governor's office and to the right people and connect people and get them in the right hands. That's been great. Also, we do advise, these are the commissions do advise the governor on situations that are happening in our community so that he is better informed and equipped to make decisions.
Yeah.
And some of the things, particularly for my commission that we work on, is affordable childcare, mm-hmm. Language access, and it's working. So
hell
it's
yeah.
working. Some things are getting like the governor really wants to make sure that there is a seat for everybody at the table in Pennsylvania. He always says, no matter what you look like, what language you speak, who you love, who you pray to, you have a home here in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So we're working hard to make sure that that's happening. So in mine, particularly language access, making sure everyone has language access too.
That's so cool. So yeah. How many languages do you think people are able to speak in your salon?
Okay, so we have... For sure, we've got English, Spanish, Greek, Albanian.
Wow.
Yes. And we did, like, two Christmases ago, we did a really cute little reel for Christmas because I looked around and noticed that everybody in the salon, I think there was probably seven different languages happening one time.
Wow.
I looked around and saw there was this massive multicultural group. I said, oh my gosh. I said, you guys, I'm going to take a video of everyone. I want you to say Merry Christmas in your language.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yep, I think we had somebody from the Philippines. I guess it was just, we had a multicultural group of people and we did a cute little Merry Christmas reel.
That's very cool.
Yeah. But on any given day, we're English, Spanish, Greek, Albanian.
That's awesome.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So I know you've already told me the story, but the same day that you got the phone call about introducing Vice President Kamala Harris was also the same day of the Saquon Barkley
backwards hurdle.
Yeah.
Girl. Yes. And you guys can't see her, but she is in her Kelly Green Jalen Hurts jersey right now. When I opened the door, she made me so happy. I was like, come on, go Birds.
Just for you. Go.
Yes.
Birds.
Not only are we on the same side politically, we're on the same side on the sports teams
we're
here too.
All the right.
We are. We really are. Yeah, we really are. Okay. So she's got her Jalen jersey on. And you guys, add this to more incredible stories of my life. So I am an Eagles fan. I am a home team girl all the way. So I love to rep us all the way around here. I am repping the home teams. It is Iron Pigs. It is Philadelphia Eagles. It's us all the way. It's Lehigh Valley. It's Eastern Pennsylvania. So I go to the Eagles game. I like to catch, you know, one in-person game a year. And I am at the game. I believe it is against the Jaguars, and I am at the game where Saquon does the backwards hurdle. So, and of all the times that I'm filming, I film everything, and I'm not filming at that time. I'm watching with my own eyes. So I'm missing the actual video clip, but I saw it with my own eyes.
Yep.
And during that game, well, let me rewind a little bit. Earlier that day, and I already was campaigning for several months.
Okay.
So I already was campaigning for our first female president, who should be the president right now. But so I was campaigning for months, and her campaign had reached out to me earlier that day. And at that point, we were talking almost on a daily basis. And they reached out to me that day and that morning, and they had a couple really specific questions. I answered the questions, and they said to me, there could be something. I kind of already got wind that she was coming. Oh. I'm not sure if it was announced yet, but I kind of got wind because, you know, I know I'm a little bit connected.
I kept saying she needs to come to Allentown.
Yes. Oh, I wish it would have been sooner, but okay. So we got to stop in there. So I was tipped off a little bit, and I got a phone call that said there could be something big happening. I answered a few questions, and then the almost like how all of my political phone calls ended, it was like, we'll be in touch.
Oh,
yes. Okay. And so, and I understand the for safety reasons too, not giving too many details in advance. Everything when you're campaigning, everything is very last minute,
hush, hush.
Which does not work well in my life, girl. Talk about having to pivot.
I mean,
I am the most OCD type A personality, plan my whole life long. Like the next, like I'm planned at least 8 to 10 weeks out. As you know, we had to plan this like 3 months out.
Yeah.
So I am like, you know, so campaigning is difficult for me, but I love it so much. I love it so much, you know? So they call me and they say, you know, answer the questions. Something big may be happening. We'll be in touch.
Oh,
okay. Off I go. Off to the game I go. About halfway through the game, I'm not sure if this is before or after the hurdle, I see like a DC number call me, because at that point I had known DC area code at that point, you know. So I see that it's DC, so I have to leave, and now I have the best Eagles link seats of my life, so now I have to walk far away because I can't hear. So I said, oh my gosh, I have to take this call. So I answer the call, and I'm like, wait, just wait, hold on 1 second, you know? And I'm like, you know, and the person was calling me was also bilingual. So I'm like, espera un minuto. You know, I'm trying to get him to wait. I'm walking up all the stairs to walk away from the game. You know, of course, we did win that game, so the crowd's going wild. I walk away, and they say to me, they said, Elizabeth, we want to be the first to tell you, congratulations. You will be introducing the vice president tomorrow.
Chills.
In your
tomorrow.
City. Tomorrow is what they said to me.
Oh, right, because you're at a Sunday game.
When I tell you, I was like, "What? Excuse me, come again?"
Say
I said, what did you say? They said, you will be introducing the vice president in your city tomorrow when she's there. When I tell you, I started to cry. I cried then too. I started to cry, and I was like, oh my gosh. I said, are you serious? He said, yes, I am very serious. And, he said, then again, much like the other phone calls, we'll be in touch.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So now I go back to my seat. I'm crying.
So all you had was tomorrow. There was no like details. As
you got it. It was like, we'll call you back soon. We'll call you back in a few.
God.
Yeah. So now it's like, and it's an evening game. Girl, yes. It was either like I think it was probably like 4 o'clock. It was a 4 o'clock game. So now, my gosh, what is it? 6, 7 o'clock? You know, like, oh my gosh. So now like chills. I'm crying. Oh my gosh. Go back the game. They won. Saquon does a jump. It's like, there's a lot happening. Oh my gosh. And they said to me, we'll call you back shortly. Well, they called me back on the Northeast Extension on the ride home, because like, what am I going to say? Do I have to go home and write a speech?
Am I
going to sleep tonight? What am I wearing?
The questions, how did you sleep?
Girl, I had to throw this together. Okay. So they call me back. They call me back on the Northeast Extension. And I'm just like hyped on 1,000, which I usually am any day. Anyway, they call me back, and you know, someone else calls me from the campaign, and they say, congratulations. We heard the news. We heard you are the one tomorrow. And they said, we're here to help you with your speech. So I said, do I have to go home and write a whole speech? And they said, well, at that point I had already been well vetted and background checked. Mm-hmm. And like the campaign had known a lot about me all along anyway. So they said, we have a pretty good bio on you. Like, we know, wow, they, you know, yeah, they, at this point, like I had already been invited into rooms that were majorly important in this campaign with, you know, incredible, really important people. So I was like, I know that they had vetted me and background checked me. And so they said, we have a lot of information, so we'll help you. And I said, okay, great. And they said, well, we can get together a draft. You know, I said, that'd be great. Give me some, you know, some direction. Because your head's going all over the place. But I said, I do have something to say. I said, if I'm going to do this, like it has to be me. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to just read, you know what I mean? Prepared remarks would be nice. But if I'm going to give you a speech, like, I want it to be me.
Of course.
I said, I said this to them. This is my home. These are my people.
Yeah.
I said, it has to sound like me. They know me.
Yeah.
And they said, absolutely. They said, we too want it to sound like you. We want it to be authentic. We want it to be you. We picked you for a reason and we want it to be you. I know. I said, I felt so honored.
Oh my God, I have chills.
So I said, I'll be home in 45 more minutes. I'm coming up the Northeast Extension. I said, can I call you back? And they said to me, you could call us back at any time. It's election week. We don't sleep.
Oh my
is
God.
Is what they
yeah.
said to me. So this was still going on well into like 11 o'clock, you know, midnight. And we're still working on a speech. And we made a finalized copy and got the speech all together. And I rehearsed that speech more than any speech I've ever rehearsed in my life.
Yeah.
Up until the moment I said it, and they gave me all of my instructions, you know, all of my arrival instructions, what to do, where to go, everything. And, you know, she was here at Muhlenberg.
Mm-hmm. I stood in that line.
Yes. Did you make it in?
I didn't.
Oh, I said the line went around the block.
It was
blocks, I should say, blocks.
Honestly, I was just so honored to be in the line.
Oh, that was so incredible. I almost wish we could have had a little bit of a bigger venue, but because things were so last minute, there was an attempt for another bigger venue, which was booked and couldn't get Secret Service clearance in enough time. So we were a little bit limited for spacing because of the last minute. So I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry to the people that couldn't make it in there.
She did, and I think I showed you the video, but she did wave to me.
You did. Yes. Yes, girl. Yes.
And
yes.
I screamed and she laughed that I was screaming.
She is just like you would think she is.
Okay, yeah.
Very
tell
nice.
Me, so how long did you actually get with her?
So I was with her before we went on stage a little bit. So I'd say not too long, but not too short either.
Yeah.
I feel like they didn't, you know, rush me too much. Like I was there early in the background. And of course the governor's there and you know, that's my buddy. So the governor was backstage too. You know, Mayor Matt was there, you know, Mayor Matt, yes. who's also my buddy. So he was there too. So, Susan Wild was there. So I got to be backstage with people that I, you know, were with all those months prior. And, when she came, it's just an incredible experience. She is like what you would think she is. She is friendly. Her staff was friendly. It was professional. They were kind. Everybody was kind. There is a spirit of joy. No wonder she's laughing. This is a joyful group of people, you know? Oh, everything was just, it was incredible.
No wonder she's laughing.
No wonder she's laughing. It was just like they're all, her whole team was incredible. It was this, like I said, this spirit of this, just joy, you know. And I have to tell you, if I had to do this all again and I knew that the outcome would still be the same outcome, I would still do it again.
Of course.
I would still do it again.
Of course.
This was one of the most incredible experiences of my life, you know. And she hugged me. She talked to me. She talked to me backstage. We have, you know, beautiful photos backstage. And like I said, even her staff before the, and they had, you know, that was the day before the election.
Yeah.
They had her on this, you know, this tight schedule of, you know, Philadelphia and Scranton and Pittsburgh. And I think she stopped in Reading before she was here. And just, they had her on this really tight schedule. And still, she just, I remember, you know, she still made you feel important.
Well, actually, so I didn't make it into the main room, but I made it into the overflow
room. Oh, good.
Room.
Did you get,
and did you get to the overflow? Well, we ended up leaving only because they didn't know there weren't seats available. Mm-hmm. And so my wife was with me and we were like, let's just go. We can, you know, find a place to be outside. We can watch live. But our nieces stayed.
Did they?
Because they had stayed in line and she actually went into the overflow room.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And
I,
said
that's
hi
right.
to all of them. And they were like right up front and got to see her. And she thanked her. She took the time.
Oh,
before,
that's
I think
awesome.
It was actually before she went into the other room.
I think it is. Yeah,
and,
I forgot about that.
And she thanked them. And, you know, and so they were like, that was the coolest. They were so happy because they were more like, for me and my
awesome.
Wife, we were kind of like, it's okay. You know, we knew it was a possibility, but they're so young and hopeful. And they were like definitely really bummed that they didn't get into that big room.
Yes.
So when she came in, it like, it will stick with them for the rest
of
their life.
Oh, that is so incredible. I'm so happy. I forgot about that. Yeah. I heard several of my own friends and actually salon clients were in the overflow room.
Yes.
They couldn't make it. Cause then, like I said, I was only able to announce with a less than 24 hour notice. So then all of my friends tried to come and a lot of them weren't able to get in too. And another thing that was kind of, you know, crazy, but obviously I've learned this from politics or from campaigning rather more, but, they added so many floor seats that they couldn't fill the bleachers because the capacity of the room had now taken up some of those floor seats too.
Yeah.
So I know a couple of people saw a couple shots of the bleachers. I'm like, what do you mean? Why do they turn people away?
Right.
Why? I'm like, wait, you have to consider. In a typical basketball game, there's, you know, scattered people on the floor and the bleachers are all filled. Mm-hmm. Now we've got the reverse happening. We've got not scattered on the floor. We've got a full floor.
Right.
So we ended up being at capacity, although it kind of looked like there was some space, but we really reached the capacity number of people. So I'm so glad they were able to do that. Yeah. And do the overflow. And
it made me happy, to be honest. The like seeing the amount of people waiting and the line, like, it gave me so much hope.
Oh, it did.
Anyone who was angry about it, I mean, I just, that's a silly way to look at it, because you never know what's going to happen.
I can't wait till we can feel that hope again. I can't wait till we feel that joy again and we feel that hope again. And, you know, I'm like, oh, just like, we're gonna get there. We're gonna get there
every day.
Yes.
So you can remind me that it's coming back.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. But honestly, though, how did you sleep that night?
I don't think I did much. Like I said, I think I reviewed, but then also I was like, wait, I want to look glamorous. Hold on. Don't have bags. You know, try to go to sleep. Go to sleep. So I was like looking for clothes and like steaming a dress, you know, well into the night, and just like so super excited. Cause like I said, I publicly could announce it, but I was, you know, texting friends, you know, but I don't really think I slept that good. And then, you know, when they said that, when they gave me the instructions and I would go out on the stage and I'd walk out there, just like I was watching everybody do all those months prior, then they said, after you speak, stay at the podium and wait. She will come to you and she will probably embrace you.
Oh.
And when the photos and the videos and just her giving me that hug and just, oh my God, and that was another thing that was genuine. It was so genuine. She gave me the most genuine hug. We had a couple little brief words up there, her and I together. And it was awesome.
So when you see me and we hug, like, I'm one hug away from...
That's right.
Vice President. Yes,
that's right.
We're connected. Yes,
we're connected.
By you.
Yes.
Yes. For giving me that gift.
Good. Oh, good. Oh. I want to send everyone her joy.
Yes.
Her joy and her positivity and her hugs. Yes.
Okay. I have a couple more questions.
Yes.
Okay, so we've talked about a bunch of different things, and obviously it goes without saying, because you're a woman, how multifaceted you are. You are a single mom, you are a business owner, you are a commissioner for the state, you're embedded in the community, you're obviously just involved. How do you set boundaries? Do you set boundaries? Do you say no to certain things? And how do you feel like you balance it all?
Again, like we were talking about self-care. So self-care and balancing is really the trick probably to such a full schedule. And now I've kind of reached a point too where I get, which is a good problem to have. I get so many invitations that I can't do them all. And I want to do everything.
Yeah.
Everything you guys invite me to, I want to do. I want to do everything. Oh, I swear. I promise I want to do everything. But I just can't do everything. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I do have to say no to things. And sometimes I have to let my yes be yes and my no be no. Sometimes I have to turn things down. Mm. But yeah, really just making sure that my schedule stays balanced. So anybody who's balancing, which is a lot of us ladies, balancing a lot of things, really taking a look at your schedule and making sure that you have a good balance of work life and social life and community life, and then just your own me time as well. Mm-hmm. So I know it's not like a little crazy, but sometimes I have to actually schedule myself me time. So I have to kind of put an X in my schedule, because I'll really quick, I'll fill it. And I have to remember, like, oh, this is a me day, or this is a me afternoon, or this is just time I need for me. So it's intentional. So having to be intentional, I can't just be like, oh, okay, whatever, you know, like my me time will come. At this point, my me time won't come unless I put it there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have things. I'm going to have events. And I love it all. Again, like I said, I try to be intentional with what I do and who I'm with and who I'm around, because that really, really, really plays a part in your health, your mental health, your spiritual health, your emotional health, making sure who you surround yourself with, positive, uplifting people. And then, too, you know, you have these things also when in life, you know, like, it wasn't just a couple years ago, too long ago, where I had somebody that was kind of close to me that, oh, kind of like stab me in the back a little bit. And then you think like, oh, when do you get to a point where you get too old and too grown for that? You know, I'm like, I'm too grown to have, you know, I just want to have all positive, uplifting people in my circle. So, but unfortunately you can't control other people. You can't control what other people do and what they say. So you have to just kind of keep making sure you're surrounding yourself with good people, you know? And I feel like as time goes on, as life goes on, it's not so much about the quantity and the number, it's the quality of the people around you. So quality people around you, you know, quality things in your schedule, you know, making time for everything, making time for fun, making time for downtime, making time for spiritual growth, making time for all my girl power and my empowerment times too, but balancing that schedule and making sure that that schedule and is intentional and you're living intentionally.
I love that. And it's not silly to schedule me time.
Okay.
Or to say like, do not plan anything for this day.
Okay, like, what am I doing this day? What did I write? I'm like, oh, that was a do nothing.
Yeah, a do nothing day. Whatever you want to do
Yes, you got it.
With everything going on in our news cycle and in our country and in our world, how do you, I mean, I feel like I do look to you a lot of the times, your social media presence, as far as just like continuing to be hopeful and find joy. And do you feel like you are obligated to do that? Like, do you ever have moments where you feel a sense of doom or despair, and how do you get yourself out of it?
Obligated, that's a good word. I feel like maybe sometimes yes, but not to a fault. So I am a perpetual optimist. So I am optimistic. I see the bright side of everything. The glass is always half full all the time. And I do sometimes think that comes with a little bit of a downside, because sometimes you always see the positive. You have to remember to be realistic as well. So but because I am a forever optimist, I do tend to always look on the bright side. I do tend to always think that there's a brighter day ahead. I do tend to always think that this is going to work out, that we're going to get better. And back to your question about there being an obligation. So what I also learned in all of those months campaigning and my last couple years working in politics, I've had this beautiful, beautiful opportunity to reach girls and women who have never been involved in anything politically or in their community, or who have had questions, who have come to me with questions. So I feel, again, honored that I can help them and guide them in the right direction. One of the best feelings I got when I was campaigning was the amount of young women, the young women who were in my DMs who said to me, I never voted before. Thank you so much. I have no knowledge about this. I'm just learning. And I don't trust a lot of sites, but I trust you. When I tell you what an honor that is, you know, so I feel like I want to keep that up for them, for the young girls, for the first time. For the first time. Like I said, and I'm not sad about that.
Right.
I'm not like, oh no, like, oh, here I have to go again and post. Like, I want to post.
Yeah.
You know, like, I want to tell them, I want to guide them in the right direction. One of the things I often try to make sure that they always do is like, I try to make sure that I post facts. You know, I try to be careful with that. I try to, you know, check things a couple times before I post, like, is this fact? So I like that there are young women and young girls and young voters and first time voters learning from my page. You know, I feel so honored that they trust me. I want to guard that trust, and I want to continue to be able to have you to all come to my page. I enjoy it so much. I enjoy reaching out to all of you, and I enjoy being able to be that trusted source that you guys can come to.
You are.
So thank you. I want to continue that.
We are so lucky to have you, in Allentown representing all the people that you represent.
Such an honor.
And I just feel really lucky to know you.
Thank you so much. I feel very grateful. I feel so, just like I said, I hate to just use the word over and over again, but I just feel so honored and grateful that my little career in beauty that started out in beauty has taken me here, and that I'm able to inspire women like this. This has just been the honor of a lifetime, is being able to guide and inspire women. So
thanks, Elizabeth Strong. What a perfect name, by the way.
Thank you so much.
She's not Elizabeth Week.
Yeah,
it's Elizabeth Strong.
That's right. I'm not a single mom anymore. So that name is my actual name. It is my married name. So
that's
where the name came from. But I'm keeping the name forever. Just
I love that. Yes. I love that. Well, thank you for taking the time to be on Be the People.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you for having me. Thank you everybody for listening.